Welcome to Divine Intervention. This is a podcast looking at the very finest and some of the best value South African wines with me, Chio Fraser, and our food and wine guru, Michael Oliphant. Sit back, enjoy, and if you've seen what the bottle is, buy one and taste it with us. Good evening and welcome back to Divine Intervention. This is our weekly wine tasting podcast when we travel through our glasses down to the Cape tasting some of our finest booze, wines, spirits, port sherries, you name it. We will glug it back in the interests of science. Joining me on the line from the Cape, we have our food and wine guru, celebrity chef, cookbook author. What more can one say about Michael Oliphant? Michael, good evening and welcome.
John, thank you so much. Lovely to be back.
Well, lovely to be chatting to you again, Michael, and thanks a lot for suggesting what I hope will be quite a pleasant array of tastings for the next few recordings. With me in the studio in Joburg, I'm delighted to welcome two, I suppose I could call them entrepreneurs, small business people who are well known in their circle, but in recent years have branched out on their own to start their own businesses. And for that alone, I think we should raise our glasses to, first of all, Dwayne Newman from Covert Advisory. Dwayne, good evening and welcome.
Hi, John. Great to be here.
And economist from economists.co.za, Mike Schussler. Mike, good evening.
Good evening, John.
Thanks a lot for joining us, gents. Well, before I waffle myself into oblivion, why don't we identify our tasting of the day? It's a Simon Sich Kopfer Funkel 2010 Brut, which to you and me is a Cape bubbly. It's a Cap Classique. It says it's the first Cap Classique. Michael, tell us about it.
Well, John, it is absolutely the first Cap Classique. Frans Milan of Simon Sich Wine Estate was a great pioneer, and one of the things that he did was to be the first person to make this this style of wine, which of course has a second fermentation in the bottle, identical to champagne, but we obviously were not allowed to call it champagne. So the name of Méthode Cap Classique was decided upon for the style of wine. Frans Milan, whom I knew very well because my wife actually worked for him in the late 1970s, said to me he hoped that all sort of champagne-style sparkling wines would eventually be called Kopfer Funkel, but I'm very happy that they're not, because this is a really good name for Simon Sich. Now, what Frans's first one was made from Chenin Blanc, and he literally got a couple of old riddling racks from France and just got to it and made it. And the wines now made by his son Johann are classical in that they are Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, usually roughly sort of equal amounts, and then a little splash of Pinot Meunier, which is the second black grape of Champagne, and it is one that ripens at a different time to Pinot Noir, so you've always got that little bit of red punch, whatever the weather is in Champagne. But of course, we don't have that problem here because our grapes all ripen well. And what happens is that a base wine is made. The grapes are usually picked early so that there's a low alcohol in the base wine, because with the second fermentation in the bottle, where you add a very specific champagne-style yeast and a little bit of sugar, you get that extra fermentation which ups your alcohol. Still, the alcohol here is a very friendly sort of 12-ish%. And the bottles are then literally laid down. They put a crown cork on them, lay them down, and that secondary fermentation takes place. And what happens is that the bubbles are forced back into the wine because they can't get out. And the yeast cells, as they expire, fall down, create a little sort of bed of yeast cells on the bottom. And these are then shaken out on a special riddling rack, all down onto that crown cork, then frozen, popped up, topped up with a little dosage, and the cork goes in, and then they put that little wire muzzle on. So that's essentially how the product is made. And
the important thing is, what does it taste like?
Well, I'm just getting there. So you land up with this lovely sort of light straw color, and this is massive of very small bubbles rushing up to the top of the glass. And then when you get your nose in there, obviously it's very affected by the bubbles, but you've got that lovely sort of white peach, lovely red berries from the Pinot Noir, and you get that incredible sort of baked brioche yeasty flavor there as well. Beautiful balance between the fruit and the acidity and that lovely, lovely bubble. I mean, this really is a stunning wine. I'm really enjoying this glass hugely.
Well, we've said this before, Michael. I don't think I drink enough bubbly wine.
I don't think we do.
If I go to a restaurant, I'll very often order a glass at the beginning of the meal and hope that they've kept it fizzy and sufficiently cold to my taste. And I have to say, there are many restaurants which do a very good job with that and which do offer a single glass of bubbly wine at the beginning of the evening. This particular one, I find it nice and dry, not too sweet, very, very pleasant. One could certainly enter a meal with this in your glass, but it certainly stands on its own, maybe with a fistful of peanuts or something. What do you think in terms of nibbling alongside this wine?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the most incredible experiences I had once was up in the Douro Valley, where I was treated to a bottle of French bubbly and some almonds which had been grown on the estate, which were almost sort of the size of the top of your thumb, and a bowl of white anchovies and some olives that they'd cured there. And that was just, I mean, I was almost ready to go to bed afterwards having had supper because it was just so good.
Well, let's see what our guests make of the Simonsek Cups of Funkel 2010 Brut. First of all, Dwayne Newman, are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, I do sort of taste the fruit in it. I mean, if I compare it to, I suppose, the champagnes that we often have on celebrations and Mouton Chandon, obviously I find it quite a bit sweeter and maybe not as dry as a Mout would be. But yeah, so I don't really enjoy Mout that much, but obviously we tend to have that for the celebrations and the big events.
Mike Schussler, a man of the people, are you happy to drink French champagne?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very pro our wines in general, and I'm very pro this. I would disagree with Dwayne about it. I think it is dry enough for me. I can taste a bit of a Pinot Noir coming through. I'm not too sure. I'd like to ask Michael. He spoke in the beginning about Chenin Blanc being used and so on, but that was in the previous versions. Is Chenin Blanc still used in this in the making of this classic, Michael?
Not this specific one, but certainly there are some which do have Chenin in them. Yeah, this is just Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier.
Well, it's beautiful. I really think it's it's really, really a nice champagne. I'm not a big champagne drinker, but this is certainly something I would really consider. And I think, once again, it's the feather in the cap of our wine industry. It might be small, but I think the quality product in this is very, very good.
And of course, Michael, Simonsek also do a pink bubbly, don't they?
Yes, they do. They do the rosé, yeah. And then they've got a third one, the name of which escapes me at the moment. But yeah, certainly. And you know, I've tasted sparkling wines from Champagne that don't even hold a candle to this.
No, absolutely agreed.
And Michael, if you had to compare this to a Mouton Chandon, what's...
I think those are mass-produced bubblies produced for a specific market. Mm. And sure, it's drinkable and great, but I think if you've got a really handcrafted product like this, at like half the price, for me, there's absolutely no question about it at all.
Dwayne, that's an important point, because if you're drinking a French champagne, you're paying well in excess of 200 rand, sometimes in excess of 300 for some of the better
brands.
Not
the way the rand is going.
our economist butts in as usual. Yes, and in terms of a pleasant drink, possibly if you're catering a wedding or a 21st birthday party or something, and you want to have a decent quantity for each of your guests, And unless you're a wealthy accountant like yourself, it's a bit difficult to amass the funds to buy cases and cases of French champagne when, as Michael says, you're paying less than half the price for something that's very enjoyable and is local and lecker.
John, I'm not a sushi king just yet.
Well, keep working at it. And in terms of food, Duane, I mean, would you be happy to keep a glass going of this particular sparkling wine through a meal, or would it be something that you'd have at the beginning of the evening and then say farewell to?
Yeah, I think I'd probably have it at the beginning of an evening. I mean, the challenge always with sparkling wines is, like, when do you have them? They tend to only come out in some kind of celebration. So I think I've always struggled to sort of say, when do I have one? Mm. So I've always selecting a red or a white wine with dinner.
Well,
I agree with Duane on that. But I've got this idea that this would go pretty well with, I don't know, it's a sort of, it'll complement, say, for example, a fried calamari or a roasted nut that you have at a starter type of thing, and maybe even a bit of sushi, or I'm not too sure of the sushi, yeah. But I've got that feeling with this.
Yeah, oysters.
Oysters, but that also I think because it's nice and dry, a nice hard cheese, that's got a bit something with it, but in my mind, I could see one having a nice fried piece of calamari. From a little plate, and then you have a sip of this. That's what I see.
And Michael, for those of us with a sweet tooth, sometimes it's a bit difficult to match wine to puddings. I think this would go pretty well with most, particularly chocolate, which can be very difficult.
If you had some kind of, like a French fruit tart, you know, on short crust pastry and a bit of creme patissiere and fruit on top, or an almondy shortbread kind of dessert. What I'm really trying to do is to try and get people away from thinking that you need an occasion to drink a Méthode Cup Classique. I mean, really, it's just a wine that you can literally drink with almost anything, you know, from soup to nuts. It might not take on the beef that well, but certainly duck, chicken, veal, pork, it would happily go along with any of those.
And of course, Michael, as somebody who's run a restaurant, you've obviously had to open more than one bottle of this in an evening. Quick hint for anyone. How do you open a bottle of bubbly without getting the cork in your eye?
Quietly. The best way is just to have a fairly hefty dishcloth and then take the muzzle off very carefully. And then put the cloth over the top, and then just gently hold the cork, and then turn the bottle very gently, and just pull the bottle gently away from the cork, and eventually it'll just, with a very soft little sort of breath of air, it'll come out. You know, you don't want to shake it up like the racing drivers do.
And finally, I'll ask our guest this. I do like my bubbly very, very, very well chilled. I know some of the fundies say that it should be at a temperature where you're getting all the aromas and so on. What about you, Duane? When you're having a champagne or a Cup Classique, what sort of temperature would you aim for?
I think generally most of mine always come out of the fridge, so that's pretty how I've always drunk them. And I think also I find when they're warmer, they tend to fizz a lot.
Yes, absolutely.
So, generally, I have mine very well chilled.
Mike, how about you?
I think we have them well chilled. I think the way I see it is the guys are always opening the champagne and the women put them in the fridge, in a sense. And, you know, we have it with celebrations. You have it with a New Year's party. I can imagine one has this. And but I think what I just want to make one point. I can see this champagne with food. Whereas many other champagnes, I don't associate with food, and I think that's what makes it a bit different for me.
Well, unfortunately and astoundingly, we are out of time, but many thanks to my fellow tasters for this edition of Divine Intervention, our podcast tasting of the Simon Sich Kupfer Fonkel 2010 Brut, down to the Cape, and farewell to Michael Olivier.
Bye-bye, John. Thanks so much.
Michael, thanks a lot for your wisdom as usual. And in the studio with me in Joburg, many thanks to Duane Newman.
Yeah, thanks, John.
And to Mike Schussler, and also to Malcolm McDonald, who, as always, has helped us with the technology. If it sounds horrid, it's his fault. To me, John Fraser, many thanks for your company. See you again next week.